Right. Hopefully that worked. Welcome to episode 22.
22, baby.
22 of the Black Art Podcast. We're back after getting a bit freaky.
A bit freaky. 22 is the number of cards in the minor arcana, the major arcana, and we were just talking about tarot.
Oh, good spot. I had no idea that. First of all, how you doing, man? How's your week been? How you chugging along.
That's the only answer I will ever give. I am a train on tracks.
And chugging
along. About 10 minutes ago, I was asleep and I got a call, a lovely twinkling phone call from Lloyd going, hey, do you want to record?
I'm Welsh, not a pirate.
Welsh are pirates.
Yeah. Well, you texted me saying you got a bastard of a week on, so you want to record on a Sunday. And the wife and child went out. I was like, I could have a nap or I could just do it and not be a lazy piece of shit. So I was like,
I texted you that a couple of hours ago and then just went to sleep.
But man, have you been involved in any creative endeavors this week? Anything that's sparked your curiosity?
I have been trying to be involved in creative endeavors, and I think sometimes that's the problem when you try a little bit too hard and you can't you can't get the flint to spark. There's still the odd little thing here and there, but it's kind of trying to find an idea that sticks. But I've got a slew of possible ideas swirling around and lots of things that need to be finished off.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's ever going to change for either of us. Sort of half start projects and ideas and concepts, and then some of them will be organically finished, and then the others will just be
need
to look back on in 10, 20 years' time.
There's some that will definitely be finished like in the next couple of days, weeks or so. There's one thing that I need to do for you that's very, very close to being finished.
You could sort of give everyone a heads up on what that is if you wanted.
It's a nude portrait.
Oh, no, not that one.
Not that one. Okay.
Not that one, the other one.
Oh, the other one. It's a very, very small, simple routine for Dex.
Yes, very Jake style.
It's just so shit.
No. The opposite. I actually think it's one of two routines on the Dex project, two that I can think of on the top of my head, at least, on the Dex project, where it actually makes sense to go to the pocket where the Dex is. So it kind of it's super fooling, super practical. But for anyone that's worried about potentially having to palm or steal a card out of the pocket, it's one of the routines that actually sort of works to its advantage.
Yeah. There's a couple of little tiny variations on it. I prefer one that does have some palming, but equally, you can do it without palming as well.
Yeah, so I'm really excited actually to see the finished result when you get it done.
Yes, so am I. the PDF that's coming, it looks nice.
I think. Oh, does it?
It looks nice.
Oh, nice.
It's all formatted, nice and stuff.
Oh, that does get me going. I'm such a loser. But, I think I had word that it's about potentially like 20 days before. I mean, that's an exclusive right here.
That's exciting.
But man, this week, I know we went off the deep end at the end of the last episode. But again, I've just sort of buried myself in alien UFO.
Balls deep in them UAPs.
Dude. My UABs. I'm loving those green hoes. Oh,
man. It's the only reasons I want aliens to invade is good. Go after that alien booty.
Like that one from the Guardians of the Galaxy. That I don't even know what I'm talking about. She-Hulk.
Nebula.
Yeah, Nebula.
Oh, Nebula's pretty hot.
I've also been watching The X-Files again from the start.
Oh, my God. The first really bad episodes where Scully has baby fat because she lied about her age and was a lot younger than she was supposed to be.
Oh, really?
She said she was like 26 or something, and she was like obviously like 20 in it.
That's what she said to the producers, or that's what.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Or she was just trying to portray someone younger. Like,
no. She was supposed to be older, the character, and she came in and just lied about her age, as far as I know. That's why she looks so young.
Well, it's kind of like nowadays where, but in the opposite, where you get like 40-year-olds playing teenagers in teen movies and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you've been watching the first season from start?
Yeah, yeah. When I get a minute, you know what it's like? With a,
yeah,
with
there's some boring-ass episodes.
See, no, I don't think they're boring. I'm really into the slower episodes. I'm not. I really like the episodes that are subtle, like ones that just kind of allude to there being something, as opposed to it's kind of like what Hitchcock says. Is it Hitchcock that talked about, you know, revealing the monster is like the fun of it is the anticipation, is the build up. It's like when you fall from a skyscraper, they say you die of a heart attack before you hit the floor.
Yeah. I think we've spoke before once about, is it Rope? The, oh no, it might not be Rope. Rope is the one single location Hitchcock thing where is there a body hidden somewhere and someone's going to find it or something like that. But I think there was something interesting. I think it was Hitchcock said about the difference between like tension and something else, like,
yeah,
and it was to do with a bomb being under a table, and it's like if the audience knows the bomb is under the table, then that's more exciting than if the bomb just happens midway through a conversation.
Yes, yeah, and well, exactly, man. And I kind of find I like those episodes more where it's just that there's certain elements in the show where you question. And I am going to get to my magic related part of this.
No, somehow.
But I do find the episodes more interesting where you're questioning. They sort of play the audience against the character in Mulder or other characters in there, where they'll make, you know, for example, like, so just a black and white example, you'll see the character on screen, you'll see the back of their head as they look into the woods or some trees or the sky. And they'll show this, then they'll flicker something on screen where you can't quite tell what it was, whether it was a UFO or a Bigfoot or something. And then the sort of discussion around the episode is twofold. You're going back and forth between, well, they did see something because I seen a bit of something, but was it something paranormal? Was it this? Was it that? I find that far more interesting.
Mm.
And there's definitely overlays in magic to that. I remember once I told you about, and this is kind of like a periphery of it, but a card to pocket idea, where so you'd let one audience, at least one person would accidentally on purpose see. So you say, I'm going to place one card in my pocket and nobody's going to see that card. So, but what you're doing is you put it in your pocket, and I know they can't see us on screen, but you'd show the back to the audience, but as your hand goes around the back of your body, you accidentally, and I'm doing this with air quotes, accidentally on purpose, flash the face to the audience, right? Yeah. And the whole purpose of that would be that you'd say, you'd pick the alpha, the heckler or whatever, and you'd say, I want you to name any card in this deck for me to take out. And I can't remember the whole script of it, but the whole intention was that you want them to be a dickhead. You want them to be an arsehole and say, ha, six of spades, which is the card that I accidentally flashed them in my pocket. So they think they're going to, like, for example, you say, oh, this, okay, right, let me rephrase. Jake, I'm going to take one card out of the deck and place it in my pocket. Nobody is going to see this card.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Okay.
Place that card.
Yeah.
In my pocket. All right.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to take one card out of the deck, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take a guess, try and catch me up. What card do you think, what card would be impossible for me to have taken out of the deck right now? Or would it be impossible if you could name this card or something? Well, what the hell was the script? Or something that would make them.
What's the one card that would be impossible for me to be holding in my hand right now, kind of thing?
Yeah. Oh man, what was it? But either way, right? I accidentally flashed you the Ten of Diamonds, and the heckler would be like, ha, the Ten of Diamonds. And then you'd turn it over, and then it would be the Ten of Diamonds. And this weird thing of, oh, did I see it go into the pocket? Is it in the pocket? And then when you pull your pocket inside out, you prolapse it. No card in the pocket at all.
Yeah. You know? I really love the thinking behind that. And it's I don't know, it's an interesting one because you could do that just as a little tiny opener, and whether or not they saw it go in your pocket, if they didn't see it and they just name a completely random card, it's like, well, I was just testing you. Like, yeah. See, that's how hard it is to guess a card that someone's holding up, and you can just move into something else entirely. They don't know anything was meant to happen.
Yeah. What was it? There was a whole thing to it. I'm trying to think if it was a change, and I flashed them one card, but really it ended up as the... Either way, the whole... playing off the whole, did you see something or did you not see something premise, I think is... But the magician apparently not knowing they saw it is something I think is really interesting to play with.
Very, very sneaky.
But I'm not sure where else we could go on it.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, unless you were doing it, if you kind of tried to convert that whole trick that you've just done then to something like a drawing duplication, where it was like, I want you to try and like psychically guess what it is that I've drawn here and make sure you can't see it, and somehow they accidentally see it.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's one to ponder.
The other thing that I seen recently was a movie where it was The Flash.
Oh yeah.
And it's an okay film. I mean, Michael Keaton's the highlight. But I do love, and it's a very common premise, but the premise of paradoxes. You know, something being there before it began. And I just watched this great Michael Vincent routine on YouTube, and the premise of it is a paradox. And the presentation of it completely wasn't my style. There was elements of it that were really interesting. But just a very simple, essentially simple mystery box effect he performed, with a signed card ends up in a mystery box at the end, and he just says, this is a paradox because this card was placed into that box before we ever began, which is a really standard mystery box premise, you know, and he performs it incredibly well. But I often overlook how powerful or how mysterious that really is for a lay audience. You know, to do card to impossible location or object anything to impossible location, and then just round it off, kind of like what we were saying last week with a pseudo hypnotism. Because that could be phrased as a teleportation. It can be changed as a transposition, which is two object swapping. It could be phrased as a paradox or back in time or jump even to the future. And yeah, it's just I kind of think, I want to craft a paradoxical type effect, a really nice solid paradoxical type effect for the audience.
One approach to come at something from a kind of a, not a different angle, because sometimes that is the point, but it's just, I don't know if that's an angle I've come at something before intentionally.
I did in my lecture notes where I talk about the like it's a change / paradox, or going back in time, sorry, I suppose, with the bills, you know, the one you helped me with?
Yeah.
And you need to use cameras on people's phones, and you have to perform it three times. It's a mad one.
That's my favorite one.
If you could do a paradoxical effect, right? It's a little challenge out on the table there. It could be anything, right? It could be an object, it could be playing cards, it could be bills, drawings, whatever it was. But the premise is it's going to be a paradox. So they're going to essentially have something, choose something, create something, but it had been placed there before they'd ever created it. What would you do?
I love it when you put me on the spot like this. Yes. And my brain is completely blank because I've just woken up.
You haven't said all that coffee.
Jesus, dude, this coffee
has
gone.
Here's the thing, it hasn't got to be crazy complicated, because I do think that we often fall victim to overcomplicating our routines to scratch the magician's back. And forgetting that, you know, the most memorable, impactful things are just, you know, like when Dynamo puts a phone in a bottle.
Yeah.
Or Dave Blaine does a card through window. Those are those like sound bites, visual bites that people go and remember and just can't figure out for eternity. So it doesn't have to be too crazy magician friendly, just, you know, it can be very simple. And maybe that's the direction to go with it.
Okay. Very, very simple. Now, I think, but the simplest paradox that I like playing with is just a transposition of some kind, where it seems like there's no way that could be possible. And also this stems from one of the very first tricks I saw where I just didn't know what the hell was going on. I think we spoke about it a while back when we were getting food in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And it was a guy, just like a street magician, came up to me when I was working in an office at the time, and I'd went to the pub for my lunch. Outside, a guy came up to me, was showing me some card tricks. And being a lot younger, because I think I started working there when I was about 19, being a lot younger, I was like, oh, yeah, well, I know a little bit about magic too. Like, oh, your double lift was really cool, which is absolute cock move. Like, you just shouldn't say that to people. It was like a half compliment, half like, I know what you're doing. I'm in on the joke kind of thing. And I feel sleazy even talking about it. But he was like, oh, all right, well, you might like this one then. And just had me pick a card, showed me it. And the whole, in my recollection, the whole time it was in my eyesight, and he put it down on my hand. And then when I turned it over, it was a completely different card.
Just and, simple, clean.
Yeah. So if I was to do something like that in my wheelhouse with kind of my style, perhaps it would be something with, I don't know, maybe like very, very highly contrasting, like crystally rock things or something. So like a black obsidian what? Stone turns into a white stone or something.
And then so with the angle of the black obsidian stone was placed elsewhere, you know, before you began, so it could never have been in their hand, sort of premise.
Maybe the premise would be you know, it would have to be to an audience who was into that stuff, I guess, who knew the names of things and that kind of shit. Like, you know, what is there a type of crystal that you feel drawn to? That sounds stupid, but I promise you there's an audience. And yeah, okay, it's this black obsidian or whatever. Okay, what would happen if I tried to put this, I don't know what other crystals are called, I'm not very good at it, this other stone in your hand, and then they close their hand around it, and when they open it, it's the black obsidian. As if it's always going to come back to them because they're drawn to it or something.
I really like the premise of having like a little fastened box, a little old, or like a, you know, something which just captures the attention, the mm-hmm. visual aesthetics of it, in like an old wooden lockbox.
Yeah.
Or a drawstring cloth bag, but it's bound in a certain way. You know, that just makes it look like, or for essentially is you can't just quickly put something in there.
Yeah, that's true. It's a lot prettier than a little drawstring velvet pouch.
I love mixing it. I love the idea of whatever it is you do, like mixing it with some sort of confirmation that you, like a video you pre-recorded.
Oh yeah, that's one of your staples. You love that. Theoretically, that's
something, like, yeah, that just makes it all wrap itself up nicely in sound or.
Yeah, the idea that you had about mixing the video stuff with that old HypnoCoin thing I did is that absolutely brilliant idea.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, I mean, that HypnoCoin thing alone, that's the thing I wanted to talk about. Did you, you said you went out on the week, there was a video you posted on your Instagram. For anyone who wants to go and see Jake's Instagram, it's at SynchroMysticMagic, which has to be changed.
Jake, dude, I'm trying to get in contact with the guy who owns Jake Keane, and he just won't message me back.
Well, at least change the URL for now to like Jake Magic or Jake Mystic.
Okay.
Jistic.
Jistics. Yeah, Jistics. Okay. So you can find me on Instagram at Tommy Sticks.
But you said you went out and you did a very, the original handling for the HypnoCoin that we discussed in the last episode. Can you tell us about your handling, what, you know, the method you used, the performance, how it went down, what you would do differently, what went well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was out at a pub quiz, not drinking. It was just a late pub quiz. And there was it was with a group of people. I know some of them, but I don't know all of them. And it was my friends just recently came back over from Italy. And it was one of the few nights where I could go see him for a little bit. He was like, come to this quiz at Peter Cavanna's. So I was asked by someone who was there to show them some tricks because they'd seen stuff 2 or 3 years ago, maybe last time I saw them. As is the best way to do things, just deny them instantly. No, I don't feel in the mood. No, it's not the right time, until they just keep asking and they can't give up on it. So I did some super silly basic card tricks, just stuff that I could do whilst I was talking, having a nice time. Like, you know, Gemini twins made an appearance, just stuff like that. I wanted to do some billet work, and the conversation that they were having at the time led me to kind of like jazz up a little plot on the spot. They were talking about a BuzzFeed quiz, and I think it was literally something as stupid as like, which Friends character are you? Or something like that. And I was saying, like, you know, is there actually a TV character that maybe not physically, but you can relate to them in some way? Actually, don't tell me. Will you write it down and show your friend? And then went into some routine where it was like semi, it was a way to get like a cheap reading on someone, because I peaked the character that they had written and then kind of just assigned positive attributes from that character to them. And then said, oh, I know what it is. It's this character. And that was kind of the end of it. I was like, okay, yeah, but I've done a few tricks for someone who asked to see a few tricks. It's all good. I was quite happy with the idea.
How did they respond to it?
Yeah, the response was great. It's like, I don't know, you're never going to get like someone standing up and clapping when you're in a pub quiz, but it was for what it was. The reaction's great. Nervous laughter and like, how did you do that kind of stuff? And that was originally going to be the end of it, because I was quite happy with that plot line. And I was like, I might work on that somehow, because I think that is quite a decent way to get a reading on someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like self-confirmation. It's like they're giving you the reading, essentially. As long as there's no way you could have got the peak, then how are you giving them these attributes and positive characteristics that you relate to them? But this lady kept asking to see something else. And I said, okay, well, I can show you something, but it's just for you. So we'll have to go over to a different table in like 5 or 10 minutes. When we went over, I just kind of did the basic. It was the basic HypnoCoin routine, except there was a few little subtleties that we spoke about that I kind of tried to add to it, to do with time misdirection, so that people saw her doing I told her what she was going to do and had her reenact it. They saw that movement and what happened there. And then I shifted positions so that they couldn't see what was going on, as if I was just talking to her.
It's kind of like PK touches, but PK visuals.
Yeah, 100%.
But were you a flipper coin or a coin shell or
pure? Oh, yeah. Sorry. It was just a flipper coin. And I had another coin in my sleeve.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So it was literally just, there's two coins in one hand. Oh, now there's a coin in each hand. You did that. And after I'd done that effect, I kind of stayed given a little bit more of an in-depth mini reading.
Okay.
So that there was more time between when her friends had seen her touch the coin and when she went back for her as well as for them. So it wrapped itself up a lot neater, because she did just ask them, did I do that? And they said, yeah. Like, what do you mean?
And if she had asked them, how many times did I do that?
No, she didn't ask that. I think that's where the time restriction came in, because I think she might have like almost forgot that she'd done the reenactment at the start.
Just to everyone at home, listen, if you didn't catch last week's episode, HypnoCoin is a routine that Jake does and he created years ago, where you have two coins in one hand, no coin in the other hand, and you say to a spectator, in a moment, I want you to do the following. Take the coin from my left hand and place it into my right hand. And you're going to do this when I say the word Romeo. And when I say Juliet, that will be the end of it, right? So you say, like, let's try it out now. And you do this away from a group, but they can see you in the distance. Mm. So you say Romeo, and they do it, and they put in the other hand, Juliet. And you say, so now we're going to do it for real. Like Jake said, he builds some time misdirection up.
There's like light induction, semi-hypnosis stuff, but it's not for real. I think with her, it was literally like closing her eyes, counting back from 10. Imagine she was walking down a staircase, and then I had her imagine her hand was getting lighter. When it did start getting lighter, I was like, just allow it to raise. And so she rose her hand, and she was kind of in that mindset then that something had happened.
Yeah. And then the effect is that using the flipper coins and the coin sleeve, you just say, instead of saying Romeo and Juliet, you just say, and Juliet. And it feels like they forget that you said, Romeo, and they forget that you did it, and the whole, they think they moved the coin while they were hypnotized, and there's no recollection of it.
Yeah, that was your little subtlety to add, which I really, really appreciate, because I think it worked a lot better.
What was the initial reaction when you said "and Juliet" and then she realized that the coin had gone?
Well, when I said "and Juliet" was when I closed my hands and opened them, and a coin was in either hand, and there was, I don't know how you categorize it. It was kind of like shock, but it was like someone being very, very confused as well.
Right.
Because she was looking up at me, and then I signaled down to my hands like this as I went, "and Juliet." So she was looking at me and then looking at my hands, and then she looked back up and I was looking at her, and I think it was like shock, confusion. And I, wait, what?
Love that. What did you manage to, I know it's never the same if you're close and they can hear you, or you can hear them, they can see that you can hear them. What was the discussion around the table like? That's always the most fascinating thing to me after a performance like that, where it's very cerebral.
Well, my closest friend who came over from Italy, he is the most pragmatic, like, cynical person in the world. Anytime he's ever seen me do a magic trick, he's like, well, it's obviously this, you've just done this. I was like, yeah, okay, it's a performance, like, it's entertainment, please cut me some slack. But he basically just said, oh, no, bullshit, no you didn't. whilst there, and like one or two of her girlfriends were like chatting about it, which they looked to have enjoyed it quite a lot. He was more cynical.
I'm just thinking like, yeah, that's actually so good. I'm glad you went out and just tried it out after so long.
Yeah. I actually wanted to test out a Paul Brooks, very simple kind of opener trick. And I just never got the chance, but I need to do that at some point.
What's the trick?
It's so you ask someone to name a UK coin, and then imagine flipping her up in the air, and it lands. What side does it land on? Okay, draw an X on it, and then like your hands being in view the whole time. You open your hand, and there's whatever coin they named with an X on the side they named.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's really, really good. Really, really simple. Really easy. I just haven't had the chance to test it yet, and I really want to test that.
Is that in one of his books? I've got his books here somewhere.
This is in, one second, let me see. What's it called? It might be one of the ones that's free on his website, or it might be one of the ones where it costs like 20 quid. But it's not a full book, it's a booklet.
Okay.
I think it's called One in the Hand.
Is worth more than the bush or something. Where was I going on that then? One thing that you could have done at a pub quiz is you could have predicted the result of the pub quiz.
Oh, see, that would have been very contentious, because this is like a pub quiz where ex-TV, like people who've been on game shows all go there. So all like half the cast of Eggheads and the Chase and stuff were in there.
Yeah. No, but it would have been cool for your table. Like, if you imagine you rocked up to a pub quiz and you sit down and you're like, and you just drop an envelope on the table. You're like, oh, don't open that. I'll explain later on. No one mention it. And then you, sorry, I did drop a card before. And then, yeah, so you do the pub quiz and I don't know, say table 2 wins with a score of 45 out of 50. And maybe you open it up and it says, table 2 will win with 47 out of 50. And then you turn it over and it says, I'm off by 2, just to add that little. I think it's better being off than predicting you were off, because it does get a better reaction. If you're exact, it's not the same.
Yeah.
But just something like that, you know?
Just whilst I remember as well, the team name, the team name was Barb Aliens, because they'd just been to see Barbie and we were talking about the alien stuff.
Oh, really? What do they think about the aliens?
Oh, 2 of them were all in on it. My cynical friend wasn't.
Oh my gosh. It's so weird that people are... It's the biggest story of the humankind. And people don't care. Anyway, yeah, you could have... I mean, that's the cool one as well. You could have predicted the team names. A team... You could have had like a drawing dupe of a team. Like, what was the other team names there?
Oh, I can't remember. They're okay, pretty well, boring.
Whatever. Let's say the other table was called Barb Aliens. You could have opened up the envelope and inside it could have been a Barbie with an alien head or something like just kind of similar, and then a number which could have represented the score. And the, you know, the method you could have used for that could be anything from going to the toilet halfway through. You could have, you know, at some point peaked one of the table names, because you don't, no one finds out the table names at the end normally. It's not a big thing. It's not hidden information. But no, but they normally say at the end, right, table number three, you're called the Triffids or whatever.
Yeah.
It's something you could have just peeked on at some point during the night when nobody's paying attention, then created a drawing similar to it, or even have typed it into, you could have typed it into an AI art generator.
Oh, that would be cool.
AI art generator. Oh. And then you could have saved it as like the background on your phone as soon as you possibly could. And then just started using that throughout the night for something. Maybe you could have shown a text message on your phone and have someone point out, like in a subtle way, but that's just an anchor moment where someone goes, oh no, he had that from before. You know, like this is from the start.
You know the receipt printer that I've got?
Oh yeah.
Something with that would be cool, but I also really, really need to get like a mini Polaroid printer. Because I keep thinking about things you can do with AI.
Oh my God, dude, if you had a mini Polaroid printer, you found the team name, for example, is Barb Aliens, you stuck it into AI when you went to the toilet, printed it out, and then stick it in your wallet or in that envelope that you could have brought in, thrown down from the very beginning. And also in that envelope, there could be a few things. You could put a playing card, so if it all goes wrong, you can force a card and go from there. You could have a receipt. Maybe you may, oh, dude, there's so much. With a pub quiz, you could have, there's so much. You go to another one.
I'm sure I will do it at some point. Yeah,
gotta test it out, test something out. But even in your wallet, you could have a, you know, you can go when they say on Barb Aliens on team table three, and you could be like, oh my God, guys, this is the strangest thing, but I've been carrying a Polaroid in my wallet the last week or the last 6 months, the last year, of a stupid piece of art that I found. And it's a picture of a Barbie and an alien.
Yeah,
I mean, that would look mad because they'd be like, well, A, he couldn't have known the team name, or I doubt he could have. B, he couldn't have done the art, because a lot of people don't know about AI art. A lot of people do, but a lot of people don't. And C, there's no way you could have also then printed it out and put it in your wallet and designed it and known the team. Like, you know what I mean? It would have been really cool.
So this is really, really stupid, but because I've been thinking about that lately, I've been thinking about like a way to make it look pretty natural where you'd not even go into the bathroom to do it. And so I've got an old jacket, and I've cut the it's got a pocket on the front, it's got two breast pockets, and on the inside I've cut the bottom, and I'm gonna add a second pocket so that I could have a printer in the second pocket that goes up into the first pocket, and if there's clips that keep my wallet like open, so it prints up into the wallet, so you can just reach in and close it, and it's stuck in there.
That's super smart, dude. What if this is so stupid, but you print out on receipts, or no, this is overkill, ignore me, but as I say, you print out the silhouette of a Barb alien, and then you carry a bit of, because you know you're going to do this effect, so you carry a tiny bit of scotch spray, so you go to the toilets, you have another envelope on you. You very quickly cut out the stencil, spray the Barb alien stuff on the front of the envelope. Now, when you go back in, you swap the envelopes, put one down into like some spilt, there's always spilt drink on a pub table, always. Put it in there. Now the watermark on the envelope is going to be of a Barb alien, but it's going to be in plain view from ages before. And then they say the names. Oh, what? And you're like, dude, guys, this is really crazy. But the shape of the water kind of looks exactly like a Barbie alien, the drenched mark. What the hell's going on?
Oh, that's fun.
Super crazy.
I don't think that's overkill at all. For a certain effect, that's really fun.
Yeah.
Even just a force, but that's the reveal.
Yeah.
Stuff like that's great.
I like watermark, it's watermark on Matthew Beesh, right? That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so much more powerful when you use it in a subtle way, as opposed to like, oh, a three of diamonds or the word telephone. Like if it's just subtle, it does. That's when it starts to become believable.
Then. It'd be funny if you if you can always rely on the clumsiness of one friend to spill the pints at one point in the night. So it's just on the table, not
wet.
Or you
just put the envelope under the glass, because then it's guaranteed to be wet. But the thing is, by doing that, right, by like having an envelope just chucked on the table, so it's not a big deal, you can then have a dupe that you can load with anything, and there will be an opportune moment in a pub quiz where you can just literally swap one for the other.
Yeah.
Leave it there, you know? And then maybe even go home at the end, or wait for someone. Like, you haven't got to make it into an effect either.
No, that's true.
You know, you can just, at the end, like, someone goes, oh, did anyone open the envelope? Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, guys, I forgot to tell you. Go ahead, you know?
I love that.
I think merch like that is more powerful than being like, okay, guys, I wanted to show you something. If you all remember the envelope that's been in view the whole time. For it just to be a nonchalant thing where you don't even care, and if it doesn't get opened, it doesn't get opened. Of course, it's not for giga magicians, it's for situational magic.
Yeah. Most of the stuff that I try and create is situational casual stuff, just because that's what interests me. And I don't mind going above and beyond for 4 hours to get this like 2 minute effect.
I'm going to do some Bing AI right now.
Oh, hell yeah.
So you can get a half Barbie, half alien.
It reminds me of a Mars Attack.
Oh, yeah. Tom Jones was a big part of that film, wasn't he?
He was brilliant in it.
The old Welshman himself. There's a new movie out, Jake, by the way, called, let me search it in my history of my phone. And it's called...
Are you talking about the Raka Raka one?
No, it's called My Vision or...
Oh.
I'm searching like an hour ago. Talk to me.
That's Raka Raka.
What?
That's Raka Raka. They're YouTubers. They're two amazing YouTubers, and that's their first feature film they've directed.
Oh, well, I was going to say it's about friends discovering a hand.
Yeah.
Like a dummy hand or a doll hand type of hand of glory type thing. I was going with it.
Yeah, dude, I'm super, super into it.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet, no. But I watched, do you know Corridor Crew?
I do not know Corridor Crew.
Okay, they're like a special effects film production company in LA. They do YouTube videos where it's like VFX artists react, stuntmen react, and where they like go deep dive into films and stuff, and they have some brilliant content. But just yesterday they uploaded a video with the two brothers, Raka Raka, who created that film, where they were going over stunts. And some of the stuff in it is like magic, to be honest.
Oh, really? Okay, I need to see this. Talk to me. It's playing in a local cinema.
Yeah. If you've never seen any of their content on YouTube, it is the craziest extreme practical effects, like stuff that is like magic. It's brilliant.
Okay, I'll check them out. Stuff like that is always interesting to me. Yeah, by the way, Bing AI, if you type in Barbie doll with an alien head, it comes up with some incredible, realistic looking things. I mean, I'm pretty much not into AI magic. I know we did have an episode on it, you know, before, and you can use it for certain things, but in a situation like that where AI art isn't too well known, mm-hmm. and I say that loosely because if you were in a bar situation with it seems to be more techie people or the younger generation that kind of know about it at the minute, but a British pub, it's not going to be that well known. To have something like that where, you know, you have a photo of a Barbie doll. The only thing that irks me about it is that I would hate it to be a photo. I'd love it to be more of something even more integral or more intrinsic. Right. So instead of it just being someone that knows, like, oh, I have a photo of that name. Hmm. Oh, it's like really, that's really on the button. Do you know what I mean? It'd be more interesting if, like, for example, there was a magazine on the table and the advert was a photo of a Barbie doll with an alien's head, or in the description, even if it's not even to do with AI, but there's a, like, one of the articles is talking about, you know, God, everyone's so crazy these days. In the future, I'm guessing that kids will only be able to have Barbie dolls with alien heads on them. It's ridiculous. Woke 2023. I don't know. And, you know, if you pull that magazine out and then it's like, oh my God, this is the weirdest thing.
Yeah. that's, yeah. No, that it's true. It's true. I still would use a Polaroid image, but something more natural where it's like almost. I get what you mean about it being on the nose for someone to say, like
in the background of the Polaroid image. Maybe it's like it's you're hanging out with you got like your cousins or your nieces and nephews who are kids, right? And
mm-hmm.
and the photo is of you standing, you know, because that's the reason to have a photo in your wallet, right? It's of your niece or nephew, and they're holding the Barbie doll with an alien's head.
Yeah, or like in the background of the photo, there's a painting.
Yeah.
And so that's just the frame that on your phone on Photoshop mobile, you very quickly dragged an image into it and printed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Whilst dropping a deuce on a public bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially. That's where all the best magic happens.
Do you remember? I remember years ago, my granddad fooled me so bad with a prediction. He had me name a number between 1 and 100. He had an envelope sealed in his hand. Mm-hmm. I named 72. And he opened up the envelope, and inside was a piece of paper with the number 72 written on it. No thumb tip. And I was young, so like it was just a trick. But the method was, you know, when you go to the betting shop and you get carbon paper, so you can double write, basically.
Yeah.
You just put some of that inside an envelope and then just use his nail.
Yeah.
His actual fingernail. But to a kid... I mean, if it's framed correctly, it could probably fool an adult as well, depending on the routine of it.
Yeah.
Even like doing that would be good.
Yeah. I've got like a couple of similar little gimmicks that I've made myself using carbon paper from receipt books, because you can get a pack of three for £1 over the road of receipt books, like old fashioned receipt books. And you just cut it down to size to fit in an envelope. And I've got it was around here somewhere. What's it called, a clipboard, where on the inside there's a piece of paper and there's carbon paper over the top of it. And then I've not glued, but I've like kind of crimped the bottom back closed. So if someone writes something on a piece of paper, they can take the paper and a little bit later I can pull it out. And I love stuff like that. It's old school.
Yeah, it's super old school, but it's brilliant. But yeah, there's something quite cool about predicting a pub quiz, like as a master prediction. Or, you've got that receipt paper printer, but that kind of looks like, if you've ever torn a page out of a magazine or felt magazine paper, it's very similar to receipt paper. It's kind of thin and shiny and glossy.
Yeah.
Because I know you've been experimenting with ways in which you can, you know, use printer paper, but you could almost have it set to a print setting so it looks like a torn corner of a magazine as opposed to paper, so it takes it away. Like if you think it's a receipt, people know you can print receipts on the spot.
Yeah.
But if it looks, and it's well designed, if it looks like it's the torn corner from a magazine, then they're not going to assume it's receipt paper as much as it's going to disguise it a bit better.
For example, that's true.
The prediction could be you could have it set up so that you can quickly input it could be the page number from the magazine of the score, so it could be page 45, so it could say P45 and it's a corner print, there's a tear in it, and it could be from like a Barbie special, and then the bottom corner of it could say "Do we believe aliens exist?" question mark, and the rest of the paragraph has been torn off because it's just a torn corner. You know what I mean? So you could say, so when you open up the envelope that you switched in, say, "Oh, this is what I put there from the beginning. Look at this. It's have a look. Anything weird on it to you?" And then they say P45, Barbie, something about aliens. Just that can be such a cool reveal.
You could, you know, there's probably something there where you could fashion it to look like the corner of a book. So you could have like a paragraph set up just to print out where you can input a couple of random words or something. Ask them to pick one of the books on your shelf and then say, "Okay, and I'm just going to rip out a random page," but you've already got the pre-torn thing that you've just printed off that's got their words they named in.
What you could do?
What?
What if you give one... So you take a receipt and you've designed it. Let's just say very, very basic, very basic. Let's say the receipt is because you bought milk from the shop. So the shop would be Asda, because I think they have Asda in the US as well, just so people can understand. Very small, basic Asda receipt, okay? And you, but what you do is you say you tear it in half, or you tear where the item is and the quantity. So you say, I'm gonna give you this to hold on to. So they're holding a torn receipt, and it says Asda at the top, some info, and then the part where it says the product and the quantity and the amount, whatever, is ripped off. And then you have them think of an item, and then, pardon me, and then you reveal that the half that you're holding says, look, maybe they say milk for 99 pence. It says milk for 99 pence, and it matches the tear up exactly. So obviously that's just the stupid framing of it. But if you did this in the context of the pub quiz, you give them a torn receipt, but maybe it's not necessarily a receipt. It could just be like lyrics or words or something. Now you take the other half and you put it into the printer. At some point during the night, you can print onto that torn half. But the confirmation is later on when you pull it from the envelope that's been sitting on the table the entire time, or apparently sitting on the table the entire time, you bring it out. Even though it's a receipt, in their head, they're holding the other half of it genuinely, so to them it cancels out the fact that it could have been printed a lot during the night, because they've got the matching half to it.
Yeah, I get you.
That makes sense.
It's
just a step further into like the tying up the loose ends.
I still think there's so many interesting things you can do with that, and I know it's something that a million people have explored before, but I'm still holding that hope that there's some really cool stuff I can do with it.
With a printer, the receipt paper.
Yeah, I know there's a billion amazing stuff, things out there, but
it'd be cool if, like, you develop an app where you type in. So, for example, Barbalians, you would type that in to the app, and it very quickly just puts in products: bread, apples, Ribena. And it spells Barbalians across the product. So you super quickly, you can just type in Barbalians, boom, press print, and now it's going to print you an itemized shopping list of bread, apples, Ribena, bananas, and that's your prediction at the end of the night. So you say, oh, this is actually, maybe you wouldn't even put it in an envelope. Maybe when you come in, you have a shopping bag. And in the shopping bag, you have some milk to take home later. I know this sounds really ridiculous, but so situational, because you say at the end of the night, oh, by the way, you open up your bag. Oh, there's another receipt in here, guys. And it's a bit wet from being stuck to the side of the milk with condensation on it. And you say, have a look at this or whatever. Like, oh, I wonder what the last person bought from the shop, because they must have left it in the bag. Because that does happen. Like, you get a trolley or a basket, there's a receipt left over in there, or it's in there. And then you read and you say, and then you just let them come to the conclusion, let them realize. And maybe the price is 45 pound and 50 pence, which is the 45 out of 50 score for the Barbalian team.
Love it.
That would be so good.
I used to be, actually, I won't talk about it on this.
Okay.
There was this stupid routine I used to have called Pot Doodle. And it was like a series of predictions around a pot noodle that I worked on for way too long, considering how stupid it was. And it was like, it was like, I think the most basic way I ever did it was literally just opening the lid of a pot noodle and writing 37 on the inside of the lid and then gluing it back down and doing a 37 force and having that. But I used to have this whole stupid write-up where it was like, I got these, do you know, date stamps?
Yeah.
And so I'd do like a corrective fluid on the pot noodle and have like certain dates on it that are like where the numbers were special. The sauce sachet, I'd like open up one side of it, like clean it out and have like a torn corner in there or a prediction. And it used to be this whole stupid routine. And what?
Dude, you could open it, took all the peas out and put 37 peas in. So that you say this is the great, open up that pot and count how many peas there are.
But I used to have like, I'd have multiple outs. So if I was doing a drawing duplication, on the inside of the lid, I'd have a boat. Yeah. But on the back of the receipt from a shop, Like, this was if I was going to meet my friend in the pub, and like on the back of the receipt, I'd have like a different drawing. And so I'd have them, you know, think of something, try and transmit it to me, and would hope that one of my outs would cover it. And like, I was hoping they'd say boat, so they could, I could have them open a pot noodle and it was drawn on the inside of the lid.
That's brilliant.
It's so dumb, but I was obsessed with that for like, I spent like 7 months making all these little routines, and I was like, I'm going to put this out as a booklet. I've still got the cover of the booklet somewhere. Even up until like a year ago, I wanted to do something with it, but I kind of hate it now.
Oh, dude, you got to do something with it, because that'll be... Do they have pot noodles in America? I suppose they call them instant noodles, or...?
I'm not too sure. I think
for anyone American listening, it's noodles, but they are dry and they're in like a plastic, kind of like a drinks cup you get from McDonald's, you know, made out of plastic, and the lid is sealed over. What you do is you boil water, you add the boiling water from a kettle in, and you have like an instant noodles, right, to go. Oh, look at that design, pot doodle. Subtle forces, fun and fun revelations. That's so good, dude.
Oh man, there's a bunch of stuff like that where
give it away to people who follow you on Instagram.
Oh yeah, at Tummy Sticks.
Is that your new URL?
No, I'll figure out a new one. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff like that where, you know, in the past 20 years you've written up something stupid and I'll do something with that one day.
Never happened.
I can't erase it. It's part of my identity. I used to like pot noodle magic.
I think it's cool, man. It's those ideas that take you to the idea of taking the date, like the sell by or the use by date, the expiration date, and then replacing it alone. I've never like even dabbled with that, but it's such a good idea.
Yeah, it's super, super easy. It costs like £3 to get some corrective fluid and a stamp that you can change the date on.
Speaking of getting extra fluids and stuff, don't laugh. I bought a set of replica Walking Liberty half dollars.
Oh, nice.
From discountmagic.co.uk. I think they're like £35. And they come with a shell as well. And but they're like very like shiny and silver. So I've been looking at ways to, I love that, like that blackened, aged, worn look on coins. So what I'm going to do, they're going to arrive tomorrow. They're not real silver. So if they were real silver, you can get liver of sulfur, which is a type of gel that you literally put a few drops into water and drop the silver coins in and they'll blacken. Then you just sand or gently wipe away the debossed or the embossed edges that you want, whatever.
Yeah.
But these are not, these are, I'm not 100% sure what material they are, but they're not silver, obviously. So I'm going to be experimenting this week with just ways to blacken up the coins. One method is to, I think, make scrambled eggs, and then you put the coins in the eggs and you just mush them around, and there's some sort of something that comes off eggs. Another way is to literally just blacken them with a flame, like a candle. I've seen some people, like some coin magicians, will literally just Sharpie in the black areas and just sort of
live for a little bit. I've dry brushed them with paint.
What type? What color? Like black paint?
Yeah, just like dry brushing it. So putting it on, getting paint on the brush, do it on some paper, try and get rid of most of it, and then you just like dry brushing to get it into it.
Did it work?
Yeah. The best way to do things is look up like model makers on YouTube who do, you know, like Warhammer models where they have
I'm probably going to hit up Nathan Lindley.
Oh, right.
YouTube channel. He doesn't make videos anymore, but he's been doing loads of Warhammer decorations. So I might hit him up. But one of the cool things I seen was to, and it seems really obvious once I watched it, but they blackened it with a flame and then put nail polish.
Oh, right.
Nail gloss, whatever it's called, over the top, which literally is just like clear sealing glue. So it seals the coin off, so you can't rub the black off, and it looked immaculate. So I'm probably going to try that. I'd buy the liver sulfur if it worked, but obviously it only works with silver. I think silver, glass, and copper or something.
I've just got some new coins recently as well. Purely because I couldn't find my flipper coin on it. what's it called? Candlelight coins? I can't remember who put it out. from a while back, and it's just like a flipper coin, a shell, three normal quarters.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, no, sorry, silver dollars.
I put up a video on YouTube Tuesday of a candle through card.
You did. I love it.
And thanks, man. And it was just, it, from a creative point of view, just, it was just, I was thinking, like, what could I, because the gimmick is kind of similar to the old coin through card that I created, put on the one of my first videos from like 18 months ago or something. And just as a creative thing, I was like, I was thinking, A, what looks like visual. Actually, no, I didn't think it looked good because the thumbnail was really hard to make. And sometimes I'll think of the thumbnail before the video to try and think like, what would look appealing?
Yeah.
But I was like, what would be a convincer that something has really passed through an object? Like, what would I do that, or what could I do to prove? And that was the trailer thought that I had creating the gimmick. And for anyone that hasn't seen it, I light a tea candle, put it on top of a playing card, and then it falls, or I push it through and the candle is still lit. And for anyone, I don't know if anyone's interested at all, that was like, I didn't go for the visual. I was thinking of like, what's the convincer? Like, what's the thing that makes you go, he must have. And it was just, thinking of, if you could really pass it through, I could light a candle. Like, I was thinking, you know, like when certain like magicians will walk through a wall, or they'll transpose and they'll hold like the red ribbon,
mm-hmm.
for example, or they'll hold a torch and they'll, a lit flame torch, and they say, like, this torch will never go out, and you can follow the torch the entire time. That was like my thinking with it, was what can I show to convince them that I'm not switching the object or something.
God, I love that, dude. And there's little, I think in the montage at the start, you show yourself usually doing it a few times, and there's a few little moments where it almost gets stuck halfway through, and that gives me this weird like feeling in the pit of my stomach that's such a cool visual.
It did actually get stuck, I think.
Made it look better.
It's like that not perfect, the imperfections of a theory.
Yeah, what's it called? Like the Philadelphia experiment or whatever, where these boats supposedly switched places, or it's like an old thing, like an old, speaking of like, you know, weird like paranormal things, it's like the USS Philadelphia is a boat that apparently was doing testing to do with like teleportation, and then like when it came back into the harbor or the bay or whatever, there were people trapped inside the walls because like the teleportation had messed up.
Oh, I could have done that. I could have had it like stick halfway through, be half in, half out.
That, I remember reading about that when I was a kid in like a huge hardcover book, and it terrified me. The thought of like some poor guys halfway in walls, like, help.
Not just like most of the bars and nightclubs at 2 a.m. at kicking out time in Liverpool.
Yeah, essentially. Closing time. Come on. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah. But it made me think that there's other. I wonder if there's other stuff, like, you know, one of the basic examples is like a piece of string with a ring that passes through it. Mm-hmm. With the string being held from either side, when the ring passes through, obviously the string would break if it wasn't continuous. And I wonder if there's any other objects or stuff I could play with. Like, could I pour water through? You know, there's a spout of water pouring, and I don't know, that convinces you that when you pass an object, I don't know. Imagine you had a hose pipe and there's water coming out one end of it.
Mm.
And then you pass a ring through the hose pipe or an object through the hose pipe, but that water stream never finishes. So it's a convincer, you know.
Also, I was playing with bobble through ring earlier. And I'm sure it's been done 1,000 times before, but I didn't realize that you literally just have to, you know, what's the type of loop called? I don't even have a bobble on me. So the bobble goes through the ring, and then this side of the bubble goes through the other side of the bubble, so that's like tight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if you just pull the two parts there down, it'll come through.
Yes.
So I was trying to figure out a handling where you could be holding it, have them hold the bubble whilst you're pulling them back and keeping hold of it, so it looks like it's still on there. And then they just pull, and it looks like it's gone through.
That's smart. Try and make a video for it.
Hmm.
Try and make like a little video of it.
Just to show you it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do. I mean, it's too simple to ever work properly, I think, because there's only one way you could do that.
It'd be like as cool as doing, like, I don't know, maybe you could do like a ring through finger, but you have them hold on to the tip of your finger, but secretly they're actually holding on to a thumb tip.
Oh, I saw a really good download the other week, and I can't remember the guy's name. And it was a bill through coin, but it was like 3 or 4 phases, and some of the stuff in it was amazing.
Bill through coin?
Yeah. It was what? Like a a bill through ring. I do apologize.
Okay.
So like folded up a dollar note.
Oh, was it Kyle Pennell?
It might have been.
Kyle Pennell does stuff like that, doesn't he?
Oh, what was it called? I think it was called Bling Ring.
Yeah, definitely Kyle Pennell.
Yeah, there was some great stuff in that. It was like 3 or 4 phases, and I was like, there's 2 of them I'm going to use separately because they're so good.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out, actually. He's such a smart. He's so smart, Kyle Pennell. He can do so many amazing things. A lot of it is impromptu too, like gimmickless.
Yeah. It's gimmickless, impromptu. It's just the way it looks. It's great.
Yeah, it does. I remember that. It definitely is him. But man, yeah. So, I mean, we've been going for over an hour already, I think.
Oh boy. We didn't even get to talk about your main point about paradox stuff.
Pardon?
We didn't even get to chat too much about paradoxical things because we went on a bit of a pub quiz tangent.
I'm sure there's a joke here about paradoxes where we can say, we talked about it at the few. We talked about that last Tuesday next week. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad that it was kind of just going with the flow because I didn't have much in the tank, so to speak.
I want to specifically sit down and create a trick, just but whether it's, you know, it's not openly very creative in terms of anything, but just a nice piece that I can perform to the next person that says, could you show me something?
Yeah.
I can sit down and say, okay, you know, I'm in a place. A lot of times when I create a routine, it'll just be like thinking, what am I comfortable saying? What doesn't sound too ridiculous, but also is interesting? Like, what would I say? Not so much the mechanics or the method, but what just would be what I like to do, you know? Sometimes I create from a method point. Sometimes I create from a visual aesthetic point. But something like this, like situational, what would I just want to be able to say and then back it up?
I get you. I'm very similar. The inspiration or like the impetus for starting something can come from a million different places. And sometimes it's literally thinking of a cool name for the trick.
Yeah. Or a good opening hook. You know, like a good book, like The Man in Black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's where that stupid, what was it? A couple of episodes ago, I was doing like a torn and restore, but with a card shaped like a boat. And like the opening line was the best part about it.
What was the opening line?
I think it was like sailors and lighthouse keepers have one thing in common, and it's that they can both keep a secret or something like that.
Oh yeah, dude, can you dig that back out? Because actually that spurred me on for ages. That like, wasn't that the genesis of why we started wanting to write the magazine?
Potentially, maybe. Yeah. I don't know,
but yeah, like I, it could be a cool hook. Like if someone says, can you show me something, right? And then you say, all right, but I want you to remember that before I begin, I've done this. And then later on you could show them a video that says, like, I told you to remember that before I began, I did this.
Yeah.
But it could be what you're referring to is that before you even begun, you did that. I don't know. So then which like the opening line can be true at the time of the performance and also a week before.
I get you. So what would it be? But so like the reveal is, you know, you've got this is stupid, but you've got like the image that they were thinking of on a billet, but then also you got it tattooed on your leg last week.
Yeah, tattoos always get a great reaction. I mean, one thing it could be as simple as is that I have, you know, half a battle is just finding like an interesting prop, you know.
Oh yeah, that's why I've got stupid stuff like the Dictionary of Demons behind me and just anything about weird occult like,
you know, object. Like, you know, my the method that I use for Angle Zero, so it's signed. So it could even be that I have a really interesting looking lockbox that has like an infinity loop symbol on it.
Hmm.
You know, carved into it, really rustic, make it look old as fuck. And then I place that down. I have somebody pick a card and sign their name on it. I tear the corner off. The corner vanishes. Ta-da. And then you say the crazy thing is, you know, you could never have picked that card or signed it because that corner, I placed that signed corner in the box 3 months ago. And I've been carrying it around waiting for you. Show it to me. And then I open up the box and inside I pull out the corner. They can pull out the corner and it matches perfectly, including the signature. And then what I can do, and then after thing is like, you know, you say you may not believe me, but I can show them a video of me taking a card back to the camera so they can't see the signature, tearing off the corner that has the line on it, and then turning that, I can turn that around, put it in the box, lock the box. Maybe that's how the trick begins. I give them a key.
Yeah.
I say, I want you to hold on to this. And then I do the whole routine. So it's just basically angle Z with my sign handling, but angle zero. And it's all presentation and a pre-recorded video, which is no method. It's not method. It's just a pre-recorded video.
Hmm. I really like the idea of the key, because that anything that's a kind of Chekhov's gun where they know it's going to come into play later is interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like a MacGuffin sort of thing.
Yeah. I was watching a video on editing earlier, and it was I can't remember the guy's name. He does like,
who lights a candle?
No. I don't think it was him, no. It was I think his name's like Hillier Smith or something. He used to do Logan Paul's videos and Mr. Beast's videos and stuff. And he was talking about, he was with another content creator, I can't remember the guy's name, and he was going over, like, why have you included this in your video? Why did you do this? He was like, you're showing around the boat and showing these items that you've got and naming them all, and then they never want to come into play in the rest of the video. Like, why have you still kept it included? And, yeah, I don't know.
Because it makes you think it's going to come back up later.
Mm.
Javier was telling me a great thing, about and he incorporated, I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched Javier's YouTube stuff, his tutorial.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, his lighting's brilliant,
phenomenal, like absolutely phenomenal. And one of the rules that he tries to incorporate is that so he was reading how to write stories by Dan Brown, and I know Dan Brown gets shit on by the writing community,
yeah,
but it's one of those things, it's like, he might get shot on the writing community, but he also has written global phenomenons. It's like those are people that like do the professional wine testers.
Yeah.
This wine's terrible. And they can't tell the difference between like little wine and you know,
yeah.
Something like, I know, tangents. But yeah, he was reading that one of the things Dan Brown does, which hooks people, because his stories, regardless of his ability, his writing style, they are readable. You can't put them down.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
They're the best kind of airport novels, just pulpy, non-stop, like,
yes,
thriller.
Yeah. First time I read The Da Vinci Code, I was on a 48 or 3-day ferry from the UK to the south of France. And it was the first book, I was a teenager, I was so young. The Da Vinci Code was the first book that I read in a day. Because I couldn't put it down. And anyway, so what Dan Brown says in his writing course is that he asks like really, really intriguing questions that the reader is going to be dying to know, and then he constantly will answer them, but at exactly the same time will ask another question which you need to know the answer to, which seems obvious, like kind of obvious saying it out loud, but I think it's quite, with putting that box around it and having it as a tool now.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Javier says he uses that in his videos, where they'll be, you know, oh, I'll stick around and I'll show you how, I'm going to show you how to do this with a gimmick, but pay attention because I will show you how to do this with no gimmicks. And then he shows how to do it with no gimmicks. But now I'm going to show you how to do it impromptu.
Yeah.
You know, to keep them engaged. And I suppose you can apply it to man, like you're saying, with a key. I'm going to hand you a key. Now they have a question. What does that key unlock? But as soon as they unlock it, they're going to be given another question. What's inside the box?
Yeah.
It's going to be a key to a box.
Yeah. Anything that I write or come up with, the first draft will usually not have much structure, but then I do try and hone in on the structure just because of, like, you know, a background in writing. And I want everything to have the hero's journey and to be this three-part, you know, setup, conflict, resolution. People are more comfortable watching or listening to something when it follows this structure. And there's a reason it's been around this long. So when something is just super open-ended or it's like all over the place, people don't feel like internally comfortable watching. It's like jarring to them that there's no setup, conflict, and resolution.
Yeah. What's that thing I hear before, which is really, really annoying? It's almost like going
the cadence. Yeah, that's very emotionally unsatisfying.
It's really unsatisfying, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have to finish it.
Yeah. What's that? Is it called the Doppler effect? No, it might not be Doppler. What's the one where it's you just switch in the chords continuously and it sounds like it's constantly going up in pitch or going down? Have you ever?
By the way, for anyone listening, dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah. There we go. There's your resolution.
you need the resolution to it.
Yeah, it's completely unsatisfying without like the little bow when you can relax and go, oh, it's over.
I wonder if people feel like that when they see an angle zero type thing and the card's not restored at the end. Do they ever get that?
I don't know. I did an angle Z the other day, actually, when I was doing the silly card tricks in the pub quiz. And I was made up because it was the simplest like put pocketing I've ever done. Someone just leaning over the table to talk. And I was like, wow, wait, their pocket's right there. Quickly to tear off the corner of a four of clubs and put it in.
That's great. That's smart. I remember years and years and years and years ago, the first thing I came up with when I read Angle Zero was to load it in some way. I get people to make a cave, I think I was talking about this before, with their hands, and then you can actually get a corner in there without they won't feel it. And I never did anything with it ever. And then I think Justin Miller published it. Not obviously completely independent creation, no death at all, but I remember thinking I don't remember thinking anything, just it was just one of those. I remember thinking like, wish I'd published it first, like wish I'd done that.
Whenever I see someone is coming out with a new release for PK stuff, I get terrified that they'll have independently made the thing that I want to put out someday.
the one that you're about, the one that you've shown me.
Yeah.
I love that thing, dude.
Someone will put it out before me one day and I'll only have myself to blame.
Yeah, you will. Well, anyway, on that note, folks, that's about, I don't know how long we've been rolling for, but it was a heck of a good episode.
Hell yeah.
Obviously, I keep wanting to go back to it, but I'm trying not to make these too long. I'm going to make that paradoxical effect. I'm going to do it. Just to actually complete one task.
Mm-hmm.
Ourselves.
Hell yeah.
You're going to do the same thing?
I'm going to try and do something. I promise I will not go back to sleep. I mean, I say this with complete sincerity. I'm a witch, I'm a diviner, a scryer, a faith healer. I channel the dark cosmic energy of the universe, but I still need my little Sunday snoozies. I'll try not to. I'll try go be creative.
Amazing. All right, well, folks, we'll see you next Wednesday, 5 p.m. UK time. Early morning America somewhere. Yeah. And middle of the night for the rest of the southern hemisphere of the globe.
Yeah, listen to it whenever.
Listen to it whenever, folks. But I've been Lloyd.
I've been Duke.
Soon, peace.
Bye bye.